This is a podcast from ABC Radio Overnights. I'm Rod Quinn. Jacqueline Schildkraut is our guest from State University of New York, who has done long studies into mass shootings in the US. She's our very special guest on the program before, but again this morning. Jacqueline, good morning. Welcome back to the show.
Good morning.
Last time I talked to you, which now doesn't seem all that long ago, we talked about how mass shootings were not as common as we might think, and yet there's now been this other one now at a school. But the response to this school shooting has been much greater, it seems, than previous mass shootings, and especially those in schools. Why do you think it's different this time?
You know, I think that people are starting to identify here in America that, yes, there have been opportunities to prevent these incidents from occurring. You know, when it came out that the school had requested a threat assessment on the particular perpetrator because he showed clear warning signs such that they were, you know, cautious about even letting him have a backpack at school. And they had requested a threat assessment and that didn't get carried out. And then, you know, the issue with the FBI not investigating it or investigating a tip about this particular individual. I think people are starting to just get fed up with, hey, we could have prevented it, you know, and it wasn't done. And I think, you know, it's really interesting because there was a quote that came out or a question that came out at the town hall last night. And one of the students was like, why didn't you guys figure this out at Columbine? And I really think that that's a question everybody should be asking because, you know, in 2 months, it's the 19th anniversary of Columbine. So in 19 years, they've done nothing.
And some politicians say, well, look, no matter what we do, there's nothing we can do. Somebody who wants a gun will always get a gun. So when the next school shooting happens, will those politicians say, see, I was right? So what can be done, honestly, to stop these sorts of school shootings?
You know, I think that's an interesting question that you raise. I hope that no politician is callous enough to say, see, I told you so, particularly to a bunch of high school kids, because those high school kids are sort of taking them on very heavily right now. But, you know, one thing that I think is an issue here in this country, and you sort of alluded to this in saying, you know, I don't know that anything is going to be done, is that issues like gun control in this country are extremely polarized, right? It seems to be this very black or white issue, like you're either going to have guns or you're not going to have guns. And so in that respect, that's why no movement is made, because everybody's just trying to yell over one another and they're not making any real progress, even though if anybody kind of stopped and listened to each other, both sides are saying the same thing. They're both saying that they support common sense measures like background checks and also keeping weapons out of the hands of people that shouldn't have them. You know, you made a very good point that, you know, we're dealing with criminals, right? So it doesn't matter what type of laws that you put into place, criminals will break the law to get what they want. But we can do a number of things to make it more difficult for them to get those weapons. You know, one of the most glaring issues, we saw it back in 2007 with Virginia Tech, and while it wasn't in a school, it sort of reared its ugly head 10 years later with the Sutherland Springs shooting back in November, is there's a number of records that are missing out of our national instant background check system that won't necessarily tell a perpetrator, okay, well, you can't get a gun legally, so you're not going to get a gun at all. We know that they're, again, they're criminals, but it's putting roadblocks in the way to make things more difficult and hope that it's going to deter them while going and engaging in other types of prevention and proactive strategies.
So one of the simple things that could be done, which is being blocked by successive politicians and congresses, is that there's no study of shootings by the Centers for Disease Control. So would that be a way of helping things and, in fact, getting some accurate statistics on these things?
You know, I think that's a great question. One thing that, you know, we, especially I advocate for, is the need to have that data set. You know, one of the biggest issues in creating that data is, or that sort of database, is the fact that nobody can agree on what constitutes a mass shooting. I'm sure you've seen that every town for gun safety puts out, you know, there's been X number of school shootings this year, or there's been X number of school shootings since Sandy Hook. But the problem is that, you know, while any gun going off on a school campus ground is absolutely not okay, there are qualitative differences between someone committing suicide, a gun accidentally discharging, and someone trying to blatantly kill people. And so when you lump all of those things together and you sort of remove this variation in motivation, it makes it much more difficult to respond. But what you end up doing in that case is inflating statistics. The Center for Disease Control actually does a, I believe it's School Associated Violent Death Study every single year. year, and it includes information about homicides on school grounds. But again, there's a fundamental difference between, you know, what we would typically think of as a homicide and sort of these mass casualty situations.
So Donald Trump suggested yesterday that arming teachers might be a good idea. Is more guns on school premises, is that the answer?
Absolutely not. You know, one thing I can point to right off the bat is that even if that were to come to fruition, number one, there's a large number of teachers that don't want to do it. You know, when people sign up for that profession, I myself am an educator, we do it for the love of teaching, for the love of helping people to learn. We didn't sign up to be armed security guards. And so I think that that's a lot of the pushback that, you know, people are kind of saying, like, we didn't sign up for this. We don't want that responsibility. The other issue is from a tactical standpoint or a training standpoint, you know, law enforcement officers or security guards who do this type of thing, they receive a lot of training. And even in high stakes, high stress situations, they're not 100% accurate in their shooting. So now you're talking about civilians who get even less training and then putting them in a position to be 100% accurate so they don't kill additional people, forgetting the fact that when law enforcement responds to a scene, they're not going to stop and go, I'm sorry, who's the shooter and who's the teacher? That's not their concern. Their concern is to neutralize the threat, and somebody with a gun is a threat, whether or not they are, you know, a good citizen or a bad guy.
Does it concern you that the president is making these suggestions?
I think it's an irresponsible suggestion that should not have been made, yes.
Okay. There have been attempts in the past to limit semi-automatic weapons, automatic weapons, assault rifles as well. Was that successful in reducing the number of shootings or the number of shootings using those weapons?
You know, people constantly point to an assault weapons ban as the answer to all of these problems, and there's a couple of reasons why that's not a one-size-fits-all solution. The first one being is from the research we know that about half of mass shootings in schools, or just even more generally, are committed with handguns. So even if you removed all of, you know, these so-called assault rifles, you're still leaving half of the cases, you know, sort of on the table. We can look at Virginia Tech, in which 32 people were killed and 23 others were wounded, and that was committed with two handguns. So, you know, even a lot of the more lethal shootings tend to use the assault rifles, but it's not an exclusive, everybody's using an assault rifle. The other issue to kind of take into consideration is that there was an assault weapons ban in place in this country back in from 1994 to 2004, which of course overlaps with Columbine. And one of the guns that was used in Columbine was actually on the list of banned weapons. Now, the two perpetrators were under 18 when they secured their guns, which is already illegal, but it wasn't like they sent somebody to a gun store, passed, you know, the background checks, all of that. They just got it from a friend. So because there's less regulation on person-to-person sales versus like person-to-dealer, or sorry, dealer-to-person, you know, things like gun shows, that makes it much more attractive to a would-be offender.
So what can be done then? Can you think of any amendments to the law, changes to the law that actually might reduce the number of shootings? Because it was pointed out that there have been the same number of school shootings in America this year as there have been in the rest of the world in all of history. It seems incredible, but what could be done now in the US to at least limit the number of school shootings?
You know, first I would caution on that statistic. I haven't seen the data behind it, but we've already been having sort of a discourse here in America. People were saying, oh, the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas shooting is the 18th school shooting. And we're all like, no, that's not correct. So, you know, I would definitely caution the interpretation of that statistic, but I certainly get where you're coming from. You know, for me, as an academic and somebody who tries to, from a research perspective, remain politically neutral, I don't see the gun debate going anywhere. It's too politically polarized, it's too politically charged, and there's a complete inability to get to a gray area where both sides can meet. I think a more proactive solution is to address things like threat assessment. We hear in this country all the time, and it's been, you know, sort of on loop since 9/11, if you see something, say something. And somebody did see something and said something, and it wasn't isn't taken seriously. So that campaign sort of has no meaning at this point. So I think remedying the system's failures when we know that there's blatant issues that have led to these shootings happening, focusing more on making sure that schools have locks on their doors to keep people safe, because not all of them do, focusing on active shooter protocols and training and drills and getting people to know what to do in an incident, and also creating a culture where people feel like they can come forward if they know that a threat exists and that that threat will be adequately investigated.
Jacqueline Schildkraut is our guest. But it seems like people are arguing over the semantics of what constitutes a school shooting rather than doing something about preventing any of them, let alone if it's just one person with a gun or somebody opening fire on a whole lot of people. That really, that's what needs to be looked at rather than just arguing about whether or not it's a school shooting.
No, absolutely. And as I stated earlier, any gun going off on any campus is absolutely horrendous. And we don't want it to happen. It's not to say, by trying to come up with a more statistically accurate number that the people who commit suicide don't matter or that the accidental discharges don't matter. They just require unique responses. There's a very different, we even know just generally there's very different needs for somebody who's suicidal versus somebody who's homicidal. And so trying to just understand problems in their context to be able to, to address it adequately is really important. Scope matters in that sense.
So one of the other things that Donald Trump was talking about before this meeting at the White House was banning bump stocks. That was also discussed after the Las Vegas shooting, because that's one of the reasons there was so much carnage there. Would a little thing like that make any difference?
I would love to say yes, but it is essentially putting a barricade, or a deterrent in one respect, in the way of the shooter. But we also know, again, that a lot of these highly lethal shootings don't use bump stocks. They just use multiple magazines and not even high capacity ones, just 10 to 15 rounds. And I say just, because we've seen obviously debate about, the Aurora shooter had a 100 round magazine and, that's not acceptable. But we're seeing people using just standard magazines or standard clips that they can buy, that any civilian can buy. So, while I think, again, focusing on the bump stock is important, we saw that used in one shooting. And so it's like focusing on this very minute detail instead of addressing a bigger problem.
Why is it that America is so violent when it comes to guns? That there are plenty of guns in other countries in the world and they don't have the sorts of massacres that the US has. It goes beyond, surely, just the Second Amendment and the right to keep and bear arms, because there are plenty of people in the US, of course, who don't open fire in schools and supermarkets and post offices and shopping malls and concerts. Why is it that America has this culture?
I think in some respects, America's just gotten very desensitized to violence. One thing, we talked after Las Vegas, and one thing that really struck me is about 2 weeks after the shooting, nobody was talking about it anymore. And it's like, how do you just move on from 58 people being killed and, almost 500 being injured? And in a lot of respects, the way I describe it is America has ostrich syndrome. They just sort of stick their head in the sand, and when another shooting happens, and this is, just sort of a collective thing, when another shooting happens, they pop their head up, and they're like, oh, let's get really upset, and then they stick their head back in the sand. It's an uncomfortable topic to talk about, which is, I think, why people shy away from doing it. And subsequently, that complacency also leads to complicitness in not stopping these events.
We often hear, after these events, politicians saying now's not the time to talk about gun control or gun violence. When is the right time, do you think? Because when a decent time may have elapsed, we know there'll be another one.
I'm really glad that you asked that question, because it's something that I struggle with every day. Perhaps in that first day or two after an event happens, absolutely it's not the right time, for the simple fact that, there are people who are trying to make sure that their loved ones are alive. There are people who are burying their children. Is it the right time to try and turn, somebody's loss into a political charge? No. But the right time to have those conversations would have been before they happened. And I think, again, this is sort of where that complacency argument comes in, everybody gets really upset when it happens, and they're like, how could this have happened? We don't understand it. And it's like, because you didn't want to talk about it. If we could actually have a continued and protracted discussion about these events and how to respond to them and have sort of proactive legislation versus reactive legislation, because the latter is always based on fear and emotion and hysteria and never empirical evidence, which means it has no chance of passing, then we'd be in a lot better position, but no one wants to have those conversations.
But when September 11 happened, people had the conversations about what needed to be done about terrorism immediately.
Yeah.
So why can't they do the same thing and say, yep, now's the time. I've seen this terrible thing happen. I want to do something about it today.
That is a million-dollar question. I think it's more than a million.
I think it's whatever amount of money the National Rifle Association pays their politicians.
Yes, no, certainly, and that's an excellent point. You know, even though we know, you know, from data that metal detectors aren't, you know, very secure in, you know, airports, and that the TSA has a 90% fail rate, there's still a 10% success rate, which means there's something being done, obviously not the amount that we would want to be done, but at least something was being done. Now, of course, there's been other, you know, other attacks since 9/11. Of course, we had the Boston Marathon bombing and several others, but it's one of those things where there's much more immediate action, there's much more of, you know, of things getting done, and we just don't have it. But I don't know if that's because 9/11 was sort of this big one-off for us, and people just view mass shootings as being sort of like part of our everyday culture.
Yes, because even though people may argue about how many people have been killed, far more people are killed in the US in any week by gun violence than are killed or have been killed by terrorists over the last decade even.
Absolutely. You know, and that's an interesting point. And it's usually always those sort of really statistically, you know, extreme outlier events that get things done. You know, granted, not a lot got done after Columbine, but a little bit got done. You know, we've seen leaps and bounds, it changes in how police respond to these events, right? Because in 1999, the tactic was surround the building, get everybody, you know, to create a perimeter and then go in. Whereas we know now, if you're a police officer and you're first on scene, you don't wait for backup, you don't wait for anything. You walk over people and you go neutralize that threat. So we have seen some positive movement in that respect, but in terms of laws, nothing's been done.
Jacqueline, thank you very much for talking to us. Sadly, I think we will be talking again.
Yes, unfortunately, but thank you for the time.
Jacqueline Schildkraut at State University of New York.